Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me today is Mike Lottie and also Avis West. She's from the Houghton Keweenaw Genealogical Society. And what we're going to be talking about is the upcoming Italian Hall Victims Memorial that's going to be installed at the memorial site there in Calumet. Mike and Avis, thank you for joining me on the program to talk about it.
Thanks for having us.
Avis, let me go ahead and just talk with you a little bit so that we can set the stage here. We can go back in time a little bit and take a look at 1913. We have the Italian Hall Memorial site there on 7th Street on Calumet, and it's a beautiful site. What are we memorializing there?
Well, we're memorializing the victims who lost their life on December 24th, 1913, in a sad situation where somebody called fire when there wasn't a fire, and a lot of people panicked, and in that panic, 72 people died.
And, you know, of course, people who are from here will know the story of 1913, of course, very tumultuous time with the miner strike that was going on, and, of course, the tension between the workers and the mine owners and the different parties that were involved, which we're not going to go all the way into that. There's some great history online if you want to be able to educate yourself what led up to the Italian Hall disaster on that Christmas Eve. But yeah, they were having a party.
The union children, of people who were part of the union. It was a union party, if I remember correctly. And so you had to have a union card, or your parents had to be with you then to get into the party. I think there were some kids that kind of snuck in that they wanted to go to the party too, but their families weren't union. But, you know, they were given gifts, mittens, socks, I'm not quite sure, candy, you know, so they had a presentation and some singing, and it was a party, you know. And I think it was kind of late in the party when someone yelled fire. And of course, you know, there were some parents who told their children to sit still. They didn't smell any smoke. They didn't see any fire. And those people came out of it okay. But the people that panicked and headed for the stairwell, some headed for the stairwell, some headed for back exits, some headed for windows. But I think all the victims that died were the ones that headed for the stairwell. And, you know, all it took was somebody tripping, going down those stairs, and everybody behind them trying to get out just piled on top of them.
So some things I think it's important to, you know, remember as we talk about this. This was a different era. This was a time where there were many immigrant families.
Yes.
The gathering of people would have been from so many different backgrounds that mm-hmm. were there. I'm sure it plays into, you know, trying to get the names of all of those, because they weren't, you know, it wasn't like they were signing themselves in at the front door.
Right.
Like, you know, like we may do today where everybody knows everybody in town. Right. This was a time where that wasn't really possible.
Right.
Also, you know, the stories of fires in other places throughout the country had already been pretty well documented, I think, and, you know, in San Francisco, in Chicago, mm-hmm. and other places. And so a fire in a building could mean that anybody left inside would die.
Right.
So that, you know, so I can understand the panic from that aspect. It was get out and get your family out and not worry about whether it was a fire or not at first or until afterwards.
Right.
So tragically, that of course led to the, you know, what happened. Mike, being a part of this and this effort to put this memorial, how educated have you gotten yourself and just the whole situation? I mean, you've learned a lot.
Well, quite a bit, and I've studied the time of the union, and I happen to have some property across from that location, and that gave me a chance to look at how nice the memorial is there. The memorial was put up mainly because the building was torn down in 1984, and the arch was left, and then some folks set up a memorial and nice chairs to sit around, and it's a pleasant place. But there was something missing. You know, there was no names of the victims who perished that night. And that's what we volunteers got together and brought up an idea to the village council, who owns the property, and said, this is what our plan is. We want to just list the names of the victims, their ages, and their put their families together if they're a member of a family group. They thought it was a good idea. They said, come up with something, bring it to us, and we'll vote it up, and we vote it down. And our group of volunteers got together, and it's been up almost 2 years now, but we got together and decided on the memorial that would be appropriate, and brought it to the council, and they approved it. And that's where we are. We've been getting fundraising now to get us, so it's donations are funding it. So right now we've got about $15,000 that we've raised, and we can pay for the memorial and setting up the memorial. We had thought it was going to cost around $25,000 to do the whole thing, but I don't think it's going to cost that much, maybe more like $20,000, $21,000. But we're still a little short for that, so this is great timing to do this fundraiser at the Calumet Theater. And the Calumet Theater has been, just as well as the council has been, really helpful in working with us. And the theater, Laura Miller, has been awesome because they're putting on this presentation. The performers are not getting any money. The theater isn't getting any money. Just to get a fundraiser, it's going to be a free will offering on that Sunday afternoon from 2 until 4. And on October 8th. So that's the plan, and I think we're right near the end. We met this past weekend with an archaeologist from Michigan Tech to go through and look what is underneath where we hope to be digging. And he and his class did the digging, and we found good spaces to move the state. There's a state sign there now describing the building and describing what happened. We're going to move that up toward the front, toward closer to 7th Street, and we're putting a memorial where that place is, so you people can look at the through the arch and see the memorial. The memorial is polished granite, about 8.5 feet tall by 4.5 feet wide, with white inscriptions for the names and a copper inscriptions for some decorations on the top and the bottom. That's scheduled to be here sometime in October or late September. With that stuff done, and we're going from there.
At the Calumet Visitor Center, they've got a great video on the first floor there. Anybody who's visited there probably sat down and watched that video, and it talks about the Italian Hall and about the demolition and how that was a bit of a catalyst for an effort to try to preserve some of the buildings before they were all lost. The Italian Hall being, you know, sort of symbolic of, you know, the smashing of the Calumet's history. And preserving it became a whole lot, you know, more important in people's mind. Do you recall when the Italian Hall was being demolished?
Oh, yes. I recall the building. And it was called it fire brick. It's a shiny brick. And that's not the soft kind that kind of falls apart eventually. It was a good-looking building. And it had this kind of a grayish, dark gray look to it. And it's substantial. It was right across the street from a car dealership, and that car dealership parked cars in that parking lot. And I think I remember reading about some bricks had fallen down on it or something else that was found out to be wrong with the building. And in any case, it was torn. And that was a very good point you brought up. I think it ironically, shortly after that, within 5 years, the National Historic Park was started, and brought around possibly what you say. It is before we want to make sure we look into some of these great buildings that we had at the time when Calumet, Morium, Keweenaw were and the Copper Country were booming, and their great architecture was being taken care of. But that's probably one reason why that was initiated by some local folks as well.
Have you been inside the building before?
No. I never was in. Just saw the pictures.
Yeah, the number of people then in the area who had walked those very steps that, you know, this where the pileup took place, and is getting smaller and smaller. And so, you know, as it is our human nature, memory begins to fade. And so I think it's very important what you're doing here to preserve the names of, you know, those who did perish there. And here it is so many years after it happened. It kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit on how there wasn't a memorial you know, much sooner. If something like this tragedy was to, were to happen, you know, in today's day and age or anything similar, we would probably have something up within a couple of years marking, you know, where this happened. But I understand the mentality of if people put it in the back of their mind, it was a horrible thing to try to want to remember. But at the same time, not something you ever want to forget. Now, gathering the names of those that were there, how did that come about? What was that chore like, Avis?
Well, it was really, it took us a while because there were so many different spellings. We went through death certificates. There was a death certificate where it listed the father as dying when it was actually a child that died. So we read the coroner's report, or the coroner's inquest report, to get an accurate list. We looked at school records. We looked at newspapers. We looked at all kinds of any source that we could think of that might help us, and we tracked down families that had relatives that died there and tried to get their input so that we made sure that we had an accurate list. And with anything, especially there were a large percentage of Finnish people that died at it, and you know those Finnish names, sometimes you can spell them a dozen different ways. So trying to make sure that we had the most accurate spellings that we could come up with. And it took a while, you know, because if you found conflicting information, then you had to try to resolve it. And we looked at tombstones because there are a fair number of tombstones, some that were placed there at the time and some that were placed there later by descendants. So there is a fair number of tombstones. We looked at those. The school records were a big help because most of the children that died were of school age. So we assumed that, you know, the school would have tried to get an accurate spelling on their students, but that was just one source we used. But there were a few names that's all we had was a name. You know, we couldn't find any information on descendants or if there had been, they'd all died early on. And so, but I think at this point now, I think we have a good listing, and we made a few corrections on ages that were wrong on, like on the death certificates. You know, just because it's on a death certificate it's only as good as the informant giving the information. So,
the work that the Genealogical Society did, actually all that study work actually resulted in a book called Families Left Behind, The Italian Hall Tragedy, 1913. And it's been sold over the past years. And the society has put the money aside with the village to spend on an eventual memorial. And they've gained something about $4,700 that did go toward this project from that work. It's a very interesting book. And for a $50 donation, you can get it for free, and it's tax deductible. And we have been selling a few more of that at the time. All as a result of what the Genealogical Society has put together.
How do people get their hands on that book?
It's sold in the area.
They can find it on our website. You can buy it off of our website. It is sold. Calumet Mercantile carries them. The Parks Visitor Center carries them. Mike has some for people
donation. I have some in my State Farm office, and we're already there for it. So,
yeah,
again, Village of Calumet has been great to accept the money for this, and it makes it a tax deductible contribution going to the village, and they can deduct that.
I know that you were hoping to have the memorial monument in place this fall. Are you looking more like next year now?
Oh, no, it'll be this year.
It's still going to be this year.
Yeah, it'll be this year.
Okay.
We got some site work to do. We've got the, it's an 8,000-pound monument. So that you got to figure that when the building was demolished, a lot of that stuff was just left in the middle. So some of that might be wood. So we got to make sure we're down deep enough so we get a solid base of gravel and sand to put this 8,000 pounds on. So over the years, it doesn't, if there's wood underneath there and it's just kind of, and it would start slipping and being off kilter. So we're doing that at this time, making sure that's done right. Like I said, moving that state marker to the front so there'd be room for the memorial, but that's we're going to get it done this fall.
And people like yourself who remember the original building, we're talking about moving things there, but where the arch is right now is not where the arch originally was in the building.
No, it's closer to the street, but it's much better presentation to put the arch there and remain there. Obviously, we're not going to move it, and then put the memorial right behind it.
Now, there's two lots that wing the memorial that's there right now. Any plans for them? Because I know that some people are saying there could be a lot more done there. But you know, are you looking ahead at all to any of that?
You know, this committee pretty much decided that we were going to focus on this memorial with the names and the ages and so on, like I described, and to make it a little bit a more attractive or safe walkway as you come in from 7th Street. It's kind of bumpy there. So we're going to handle that and then put some concrete in. But other things would be left to other committees in the future if that's what the desire is. But there are a lot of good ideas that we're throwing out, I mean, that were discussed. And those are all a lot of good things, but we want to make sure we get this done because it's, I think this is time that anything can grow from this, but this should be done first.
Now, 8,000-pound granite memorial, where's that being made?
It was shipped here from overseas, actually, with the granite, and it came to Minnesota. It's sitting in Minnesota now because the engraving machine that's a local here can't put it on such a high memorial. So it's being done in a machine that is bigger in the Minnesota area when that's done. Once we get the final draft of how it's supposed to look and we get it okayed from Avis and the rest of us, then we're going to give them the okay. They'll etch it out, ship it here, and we're putting it in.
Hmm. Avis, how certain can you be that the names that you have, that you have collected, is accurate? If information was to come up later on that there's incorrect, I mean, it's going to be hard to fix it. But is this as accurate as it can be?
I think we have done our due diligence. We have tried every resource that we could think of. We've talked to people, and it's kind of like I've had some people say, well, in the old country they would have spelled that name this way, but we weren't in the old country. We were here, and a lot of people did change spellings. And so we did the best we could. I'm not saying it's going to be letter perfect, because a lot of the families, even after the strike, would change the spelling of the name. They wanted to Americanize it more. They dropped a prefix or, changed it so that it sounded more American. But that's not what we were aiming for. We were aiming for how they spelled the name at the time of the tragedy. And that's why we looked at so many resources, so that we felt that we could come up with the most accurate spelling that there was.
Well, I recently took the Quincy Mine tour, finally took that tour after living here for 6 years. And one of the things they pointed out was talking about the deaths in the mines, and that, because it was largely an immigrant population, the records weren't all that good. Oftentimes, people didn't even know, there weren't even any records of individuals that died. They just weren't coming to work anymore. And somebody, of course, knew that they weren't there anymore, but there was no, the records aren't that good, so it's hard to pinpoint the exact number of people. And it looks, it looks like you could be faced with some of the problems with the Italian Hall. It's just the records just not as accurate as we would have them today, and it causes some limitations on, you're doing your best guesstimate in some cases. That,
right.
Okay, you think this is as close as we can have, some years, somebody might come along and say, well, that was not correct. But as you said right now, with the information you have, you feel this is the best,
right,
most accurate compilation you can come up with.
And I think that, like, the Calumet School records, they were very helpful. They gave us the books and just let us sit down and go through all the class records and stuff. And that was a big help, in because there were so many kids that died. But it's one of these things that, if an I should have been an E, or a U should have been a double I. You know, is that a negative if it's you still know that that person's name was this,
I agree,
and how old they were. You know, so it's important to get it spelled as accurately as you can, but I imagine there's always going to be someone saying, I don't think that name was spelled right.
As always there would be.
And then, you know,
and
I mean,
meaning well, too, yeah. with it is just trying to, yeah. you know.
We just, in order to move forward, you know, and they've had 4 or 5 years to try to come up with an accurate list, and I think we're probably the first ones that looked at so many different sources. Even though the death certificates were a good starting point, there was a lot of misspelling on death certificates. And the work records from the mines of the parents and some of the victims, you know, the CNH had a habit of kind of saying, well, it sounds like this, and they group all these people under one spelling. So we couldn't go necessarily by the work records for the mine, but it was something we looked at.
So on October 8th, there's going to be a fundraiser at the Calumet Theater, and this is be a great way for you know, help for people to help support this project. What will that fundraiser take part? You know, what will be involved in that?
This is on a Sunday, October 8th, from 2 to 4. As the organizer of the event says, that the show is both a remembrance of the Italian Hall tragedy and a celebration of the music and the lives of the American working people. Now, that's Oren Tikkanen's words. The program will include songs of sadness and joy, sadness and loss, joy and humor, and unity and hope. And some of the performers are the 1913 Singers, maybe there, and Michelle Hawkins and Valerie Anderson DePriest. Both have deep roots in the Copper Country. The acoustic Jimmy Hats include Adam Kentala, Tony Locks, Luke Dido, Andrew Aubin, Josh Morty, Jake Tenhonsel, and possibly others. The band plays and sings classic American folk and country songs in a lively and rollicking style. Keweenaw Bluegrass, that's a tough word to say.
Keweenaw Bluegrass, yep.
It's a popular bluegrass-oriented group featuring vocal harmonies and acoustic instrumentals on mandolin, banjo, fiddle, dobro, guitar, and bass. Regular members of the bluegrass are Marshall Weathersby, Craig Kurtz, Jim Hertel, Bogue Sandberg, Doug Opliger, and Cora Johnson. And there's a Thimbleberry band, including Dave Bazat, Belinda Matfolk, Matthew DeRocher, and Oren Tikkanen. This group will devoted to playing folk and ethnic music of the Keweenaw region, and will be standing by to provide musical support for the future performance. And I think during the refreshments after, which is going to be furnished by Jim's Pizza, and there will be soft drinks and coffee as well, and there'll be some music at that time too.
And there's no ticket cost, but you're taking a free will offering at the event.
Yep. There'll be ushers there doing a free will offering collection.
Well, then I would strongly encourage, one, people to go to this, but also prior to going to the event, you said the event starts at 2, right?
Yep.
Go to the Italian Hall Memorial. Spend some time there, you know, just meditating, you know, and taking in, you know what that memorial means and what's it about. And you know, think about those that perished there, and that, yes, you're right, if you stand there and the memorial of the event is there, but not of the victims' names. And so I think if you take all that in and then head to the entertainment, maybe you'd be, you know, better prepared to open up the wallets and the checkbooks to, you know, to make sure that this happens.
Well said. Yeah.
Now, you're looking to get at least $20,000 for fundraising. Where are you standing right now?
We're at, like I said, we're about $15,000. We could use another $5,000 or $6,000.
Okay. What happens, you said you want to have this memorial installed this year, hopefully, I guess, before the snow comes. So that's going to happen pretty quick.
Yeah.
If you're running short.
We'll make it. We'll make it.
one way
or the other. We're not going to be short. Okay.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. It's good to know. So, all right. October 8th at the Calumet Theater. I want to mention the book again, The Families Left Behind. This was compiled by the Houghton Keweenaw Genealogical Society. And you said it's available, you know, bookstores kind of all around, right?
Yeah.
Okay, in a local area, and also you can get it from Mike Lottie at State Farm. If you want to make sure you just get your copy. Online, is it available at all?
Yes, it's on our webpage. You can buy it through our webpage, which is hkcgs.org.
Okay. So. Anything left that has to happen between now and this? Any more obstacles or hurdles that have to be made?
No, it looks like it's going to happen. We've gone through it all, and just bide our time. We're going to make sure, like you said, we have to pour our base, and so it's got to be a little bit warmer. But even if it's cool, we can still do that. But it's going to get done this year, and it's going to be just fine.
All right. Thanks so much for coming on the program and telling me about it.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.